I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Hello, you're listening to Weird Tales Revisited. This is the first episode of Revisited that will be on the main feed. This is a show that I host with Rick. Say hi, Rick.
Hello.
And we did a few of these last year for Patreon, which are now available to purchase on Bandcamp if you fancy. But what we do is we sort of look back at topics that have been previously covered on Weird Tales episodes, but maybe sort of just like brushed over. We haven't delved too deep in. So previously we've done The Man from Torred. We've done, what else have we done, Rick?
Oh, Christ. We did The Mandela Effect. I remember that one.
Mandela Effect and Yatlov Pass.
That's it, yeah.
Yeah. So things that we've talked about on the show, and since the show's gone up, we've had emails from people saying, when are you going to talk about this again? And we don't really do that on Weird Tales, but I thought I could do that with Rick. We get a different viewpoint on the subject already sort of talked about. And one of the ones that I talked about way back on episode, if I'm going to take a punt here, I think it was like 41, 42, somewhere in the 40s, was Weird Disappearances. And I briefly talked about D.B. Cooper, but we didn't talk about it much. And it's a really popular sort of, it's not really a conspiracy, a mystery.
Yeah, it's one of those ones that's so popular, it's almost fallen into a little bit of urban legend. I mean, it definitely happened, but, you know, so many people know of this particular case.
Yeah. So when I initially talked about it, I didn't really know anything about it at the time. And all we did is sort of play a news report from the time, and I sort of said the basis of what happened, then we moved on. And we got loads of emails saying, oh, you should talk more about it, I'd make a full episode. So I thought, let's do it for this. And here we are. That was my long-winded intro to say we're talking about D.B. Cooper. So you said you were familiar about this case already, Rick.
Yeah, it's one of those ones where I don't know where I first heard of it, but it's just ubiquitous. You know, everyone knows about D.B. Cooper, it seems. Like, I even did a little test, and I mentioned that was recording this episode to my mum. And she said, oh, what are you doing? I said, oh, you know, doing D.B. Cooper. And she's like, oh, yeah, the hijacking. It's like everyone knows about it.
So it makes sense that we revisit this if I gave it a bit of a short shrift on the first time round. So we researched separately. What did you look into of your research, Rick? Or am I going to find out?
To be honest, I was trying to find some weirder angles on it. I mean, it's a very clear cut, you know, standard normal case. You know, a man hijacks a plane and escapes mm-hmm. with some money. I was really hoping there was going to be some sort of freaky paranormal angle or something about UFOs or like alternate dimensions. There's nothing. I was so disappointed. So
no, it is a straight FBI investigation.
It is. There's a lot of finger pointing, and yeah, there's a lot of people that were quizzed over this, and some estimates say the FBI were looking into over 1,000 potential subjects. And there's
that's what I've got here.
There's a common list of between 11 to 14 that I've found out there. They've narrowed it down, but obviously they never busted anyone for this.
Yeah, I made a note of some of the suspects and sort of what their deal was, and we could sort of ponder on how likely we think some of them are.
Yeah, by all means.
But before we sort of move on to that, we should probably talk about what the case actually is for the people out there that don't know what it is. So it was 1971, November 24th. And on a flight from Portland to Seattle, a man Well, it says that he was his ticket was under the name DB Cooper, but it was actually under the name Dan Cooper.
Yeah, yeah.
I think the DB was is a bit of a misreport.
I heard he definitely boarded under the ticket of Dan Cooper, and then apparently it was a newspaper put out an article and wrote DB Cooper, and that's just what stuck for some reason.
Right, yeah. I couldn't find anywhere where the B came from.
No, nothing.
So, and it's weird that the case stuck around as the DB Cooper case rather than the Dan Cooper case.
But it's catchier, isn't it? Sounds cool.
I guess so, yeah. But he got on the plane, he ordered a bourbon and a 7-Up. He handed a note to a flight attendant that said he had a bomb in his briefcase.
Well, the thing I actually like about that is apparently this lady was walking past him and he handed her the note. And I read a little interview with her. Apparently, she thought it was some lonely businessman just giving her his number. So right. She slipped it in her purse and apparently he went, miss, you'd better take a look at that note. I've got a bomb. So then she pulls it out again and opens it. And all I can imagine it said is, I have a bomb.
Did he show her the bomb? At that point,
apparently he asked her to sit down next to him, and when she did, he flipped open the briefcase, and she said she saw a stack of 8 sticks, like 4x4, and then lots of wires. They speculated that it was a fake bomb by the FBI, most likely, but yeah, for all intents and purposes, she thought it was a real bomb.
Right. Okay. It looks like a Bugs Bunny stick of dynamite.
Exactly. Yeah.
String of sausages in his briefcase.
See, whatever happened to the good old-fashioned bombs? You know, like the ones they used to have in cartoons? It was just like a big black ball.
Yeah, oh yeah, I want one of them.
That'd be amazing.
It is. It's like you run in with a bank with one of them and you run out with a sack with a cash symbol on it.
Or it's a swag.
Yeah, swag. So he demanded $200,000, which seems like an odd amount to me.
Yeah, so it's very specific, yeah.
And I feel like he could have gone higher.
A lot higher, I would imagine, but apparently in those days it was a lot of money because this was, you know, 71. Yeah. Apparently it's equivalent to about 1.2 million or so these days, roughly.
Oh, okay.
So it's a fair whack of cash.
Yeah. And maybe if he thought, you know what, give me a billion, he might have thought, I'm not going to get away with this. But he hijacked the plane, he demanded the money, he demanded 4 parachutes, and he allowed them to unload the passengers.
Yep.
So we've just got a skeleton crew going here. And then he said, fly to Mexico, baby.
That was it, yeah. Something interesting that I noted was with the parachutes, apparently he requested the 4 that he got. He said that they couldn't be police issue or FBI issue, and they had to go to a local parachute school to actually get some parachutes that he would apparently trust.
I wondered why he asked for 4.
I'm assuming it's a paranoia thing. I don't know.
Right.
It's an odd one. Because it seems, I don't know if you saw it in your research, but there was only 2 that were left on the plane.
Right.
Suggesting that he had 2 on him? It's a bit weird.
Backup.
Yeah, possibly. But then
one
of the other parachutes that was left on board apparently had some parts cut off of it.
Okay. No, I didn't come across this. I looked, most of my research was looking into a lot of the suspects. So the actual, the basis of the case, I've just got the basics of.
Okay. So the bits that I saw, it said when the FBI agent searched the plane, they recovered 66 unidentified latent prints. They also found Cooper's black clip-on tie, you know, his classy chap, clip-on tie, and a tie clip, and 2 of the 4 parachutes, one of which had been open and 2 shroud or suspension lines had been cut from its canopy. So I don't know what he was doing. He was either sabotaging or hijacking parts from one of the parachutes.
Mm-hmm.
Which suggests like he knows what he's doing with it, maybe? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think you'd have to know what you're doing to think I'm going to jump out of a plane.
Yes.
Because if I'd never jumped out of a plane, I wouldn't trust myself to get it right.
You know, like I've done a skydive, but I'd be fucking terrified at jumping out of one of those planes.
Yeah.
Like, have you seen the design of it? It's like a proper old, like, 1960s death trap.
Yeah. A lot of the FBI reports after, though, said they didn't think he was trained.
That's interesting, because he did it with some degree of skill.
Yeah, exactly. And it's weird, because most of the suspects I've got, that we'll come to in a bit, it says, like, they've nearly always got, like, military history, you know, trained paratrooper, things like that. But the FBI ruled a lot of them out, said, like, I don't think he knew what he was doing, really. I don't think he was trained. I don't know why they don't think he was trained.
Yeah, because I think someone ordering four parachutes, taking two, being able to open the back of a plane in flight and jump out, yeah. He's probably got a fair idea of what he's doing.
Yeah, I would expect so as well. So maybe that's why they didn't catch him. Like, we got this guy, it might have been him, he's a paratrooper from Seattle. Nah, I can't live with him.
It's too obvious.
But during this journey, this flight to Mexico, they didn't get too far because it was over Washington. They're in Washington still when he jumped out, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So they can't have been far from Seattle. He jumped out of the plane with the money, obviously with the parachute, and was never seen again.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the big mystery.
So something else that cropped up in my research was apparently as they were flying, after they dropped everyone off and he had the ransom money and the parachutes and everything, allegedly he was looking out the window and was able to identify the areas they were flying over from the air.
Oh, okay.
Which, you know, that suggests a certain degree of knowledge, pilot experience at the very least.
Mm. I didn't come across that, but I did see that in 1980 that some of the money was found.
Hmm.
Yeah, by a boy, a young boy found, he found 290 of the, because all the money was in $20 bills. So
yeah.
He found 290 of the $20 bills, and it was confirmed to be part of the money that Dan Cooper took through the serial numbers on it. But that leaves 9,710 remaining bills that have never surfaced.
So that already suggests something may have gone horribly wrong if he's just rained a bunch of cash down.
Yeah, because I haven't written on my notes, but I think I remember that the boy just found him by a river or in a river or something.
Yeah. So
just to be left out in the wild, it seems something... Either he dropped some, I don't know. I don't think I'd be dropping 290 $20 bills.
Just casual, is it like pouring one out for your homies? You know, you just throw a few bills down.
Well, unless he is really like, you know, double thinking everything and if I just scatter some of these around, it'll look like something went wrong.
That's it, yeah. I also read that because it was by a river, it means it could have happened a lot further up river.
Yeah,
and yeah, it washed down, so it kind of opens up a massive search area.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, this is a case that the FBI were looking into for a long, long, long time. So this happened in 1971. They only officially announced that they were no longer searching in 2016. So they've stopped the search now.
They're obviously taking it very seriously for that sort of period of time, because I think a lot of people sort of saw him as this folk hero, this sort of like, you know, Robin Hoodish legend who is like, oh, you tricksy little devil, D.B. Cooper.
Yeah.
But there's a quote from one of the FBI guys who's investigating it, who says he just sees him as a damn dirty criminal.
Great. I love those like old style FBI agents.
Oh, they're great.
I feel like he's taking his hat off and stamping
yeah, exactly,
it
yeah.
as he's saying.
It's a damn dirty criminal. It's got a big cigar.
That's the basic details of the event. I don't know if there's any other stuff you want to throw in amongst that you came across.
One little interesting thing that I found that I didn't know before actually was the plane was apparently tailed by some fighter jets. I read there was a rotation. There was two that was on the plane pretty much permanently, and then there was a total of six that had ended up following. Not a single one of the following planes saw DB actually make the jump.
Right. Okay. Hmm. That's interesting. But so what do you think happened? Do you think he got away with the money?
I'm of the school of thought that he's jumped out of a plane from what I assume was a decently high altitude. I couldn't find any information on the altitude anywhere, oddly. Wearing regular clothes, I think something's probably gone a bit wrong for him. I think he's probably got extremely cold up there. He's, you know, it was late in the day when he's done it, potentially knocking on being a bit dark. I reckon he's just bloody pancaked, you know. He's tried to do a bit of a halo jump and just screwed himself up
and landed somewhere never to be found.
Yeah, turned into jam, which is why he was never found, and that's sprayed a load of money all over the show.
Cheery
or not, who knows.
Well, so obviously the FBI, they never found any evidence of that, and they looked into, as you said, over 1,000 suspects for this. Mm-hmm. And there is sort of around about 10, maybe some more, that are sort of the names that crop up a lot again and again and again.
Hmm.
Many, many like listicles online of like who are the most likely suspects? And you see the same names come up again in all these lists. So I made a list, a note of some of these. Did you look into some of these?
I did, yeah. Yeah, I've got a couple that are of note.
So maybe we'll take it in turns of like highlighting different suspects and the other one can chip in if they came across anything else about that person.
Yeah, cool.
So yeah, I'll let you go. You go first. You pick one you want to talk about.
Okay. So the one that I like the most, but this one seems a bit too obvious, was someone called Lynn Doyle Cooper.
Yeah, I got that one.
Yeah. So also known as LD Cooper, you know, a bit too close to the bone for me. But
that's why I liked it, to be honest.
It's, yeah, like, oh, it's a bit too obvious. Yeah. he was a leather worker and a Korean War veteran. And it was his niece that actually proposed him as a suspect. Because apparently when she was 8 years old, she recalled Cooper and another uncle planning something very mischievous involving the use of expensive walkie-talkies at her grandmother's house in Oregon. Apparently it was the very next day the plane was hijacked. And then the next day, her uncle went out and was apparently turkey hunting, but then LD Cooper came home wearing a bloody shirt, he said, which was the result of an auto accident. Later, she said apparently her parents came to believe that LD Cooper was the hijacker. And she also recalled her uncle, who died in 1999, was obsessed with a Canadian comic book hero called Dan Cooper, and had one of the comics thumbtacked to his wall.
Oh, I didn't know about the comic book angle. Yeah, I didn't know that. That's interesting.
Yeah, yeah. But like everything they've said, it's a bit too close to the bone. This one was debunked by the FBI because they said they announced they had no fingerprints that had been found on a guitar strap that had been made by LD Cooper.
Yeah, they said the DNA sample that they had didn't match, and it was not strong enough.
Just not viable. But it sounds like it should be a very solid case, you know, a veteran, potentially, you know, done some work on planes or like potentially done paradrops, who knows.
I read that afterwards she said that basically initially her looking into her uncle like this was a lot of like this gut feeling, because whenever it was the subject came up about the hijacking, about Dan Cooper, she said he was always like skirted the subject or changed the flow of conversation.
Yeah.
It came up like around the dinner table and stuff. which is interesting. But have you got the quote?
No.
I've got a quote here. This, now maybe I found this on a sort of serious website, but I've got here that she once overheard him speaking on the phone, I think it was. The quote is, "We did it. Our money problems are over. We hijacked an aeroplane."
Wow.
I mean, if that's true, that's amazing. But I found that on one website. I can't remember the name of the website. I just had to write it down because I was like, that's great. I wonder why she thought it was him.
It's just so ridiculous. I think it's probably like that whole mind of a child thing. If she took so long to come forward, you know, nearly 30 odd years to actually come forward, I think her mind's played a lot of tricks on her in that time.
It's easy to fabricate memories.
Yeah.
If you start going down one route and you start piecing more stuff together, you then create more memories to back up the route you're going down.
That's it.
But yeah, like you said, he was a war veteran. He was a keen outdoorsman. And it was the niece, the niece that thought it was him. And actually her mother agreed once she talked to her about it. She said, yeah, I think you're right.
Unfortunately, I don't think he's our winner.
You don't think it's him?
Nah.
No, I don't think so either. One that I'll talk about one that I love here. This is a really interesting one. But I don't think it's the one either. Did you read about Barbara Dayton?
I did. I was going to do Barbara Dayton next, actually.
Snake in there first. So Barbara Dayton died in 2002, but could D.B. Cooper have been a woman? So Barbara Dayton was actually born Robert Dayton and had a sex change operation in 1969, so 2 years before the event. And people who think it's her think basically had the ultimate disguise of reverting back to her male persona. Is what they're thinking as a disguise. She was a skilled pilot, parachutist, explosives expert.
Wow.
So this all adds up. And so it's her friends, Pat and Ron Foreman, who said it was her. good friends for years, and they said basically that she confessed it to them. They are also ex-pilots, that's how they know her, and they went on to be authors. But yeah, she confessed it to them one night that she did it. Do you think it was her?
I'm not sure, because I've not been able to find any information on what the FBI investigated about her, if anything, because the only information I could find is that the FBI has never taken Dayton seriously as a suspect. But I could see that as being like that old institutional transphobia, you know, just being against it, be like, oh no, it couldn't be that whack job, you know?
Yeah,
exactly. That sort of old, outdated attitude.
Yeah, possibly. That might, if it was her, that's how she could have slipped through the net, I suppose, and not been looked into too seriously. The other thing is, like, the only evidence there seems to be is her friend saying, I think she did it. And a lot of the FBI ones that I've read where they were just like, they didn't take it any further, was just like, well, the only thing we had to go on was just like someone saying, I think it was this person. But there may be, like you said, if they didn't take it seriously, they wouldn't have dug in to find more evidence.
Yeah.
And it might have just been like dead in the water, that like line of investigation.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Because, you know, you'd think someone who's actually got the balls to do something like this would probably have an idea on how to cover it up and how to shut the hell up about it as well.
Yeah.
And just be like casually around for dinner and be like, oh, by the way, I'm DB Cooper.
That's a good point, actually. Like, the person who, if the person did survive, likely that they're none of these people because they did have the sense to just not mention it. Because there's a few on this list who are just like, oh, and then they said it was them one day.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I could do that if I wanted to, you know?
Yeah. Unless, you know, there's a couple here where they said it on their deathbed. So if you're going to say it, that's the time to do it. I'm going to die tomorrow. Might as well tell you this cool thing about me you didn't know.
Yeah, but is that just to try and maybe add some mystique to their life?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. I don't think that any of the people who said it on their deathbed, it actually was. It's just a cool thing to say as you're dying.
Exactly. You could make up anything on your deathbed. Be like, I had sex with a queen. And people would be like, whoa, he said this thing on his deathbed.
All right, so I remember to not believe anything you say on your deathbed.
Good shout.
So there we go, that's Barbara Dayton. A lot of these, there's not too much information, just because there's so many suspects to go through.
Yeah, it's true. It's very sketchy. It's just like, oh, you know, this person did this, they were related by this, and then the FBI said no. That's what I find for most of it. It's like there always seems to be a very short investigation. There's a couple that sort of kept their attention for a little bit longer, but most of the time they've been disproved for a variety of reasons.
Throw another one out there.
Another one like was Kenneth Christiansen. Did you catch that one?
Kenneth Christiansen. Oh yeah, I did. Yeah.
Yeah. So he'd been a paratrooper and then a mechanic and a flight attendant for Northwest Orient Airlines, which is the airline that the plane was from. He apparently also resembled the composite sketch of the hijacker. But I've seen enough episodes of Crime Watch to know that those things are flaky at best.
Well, also the flight attendant acknowledged a resemblance.
That's
true. They spoke to the flight attendant about this one, and she did admit there was a resemblance. But I don't know how well I would. I'm pretty terrible at remembering people's faces. But then if I have never been in that situation,
so. Yeah, that's it. Would get like burned in. Yeah. Yeah, apparently in 2003, this guy's brother Lyle saw a documentary on the Cooper case and became convinced that his brother, who died in 1994, was in fact D.B. Cooper. Mm-hmm. But once again, the FBI didn't see enough evidence to investigate. And apparently the brother tried to sell the story for a film, which never happened. There's also a big thing about Kenneth, around the time of the hijacking, buying a house for cash. Yeah. And in that day and age, it would have been a lot of money. And that was the main thing that this Lyle's story was going on. It later came out that Kenneth did not pay cash for his house.
I didn't see that.
Yeah, apparently that's the way it went down. So it just ruled him out straight away.
So this is another one where on his deathbed, he was talking about stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Because he said to his brother on his deathbed, you know, there's something I've got to tell you. He said, actually, I've got the quote here. There's something you should know, but I cannot tell you. And then his brother said, he didn't want to know, basically. He said, I don't care what it is. You can't tell me about it. We love you anyway. And he said his brother tried to tell him something, but he wouldn't let him tell him. And then afterwards, that's why he was like, that's what he was trying to tell me.
So he just jumped to the conclusion. Yeah.
Yeah.
Must have been.
He must have sat on it, ruminated on it, and been like, I wish I bloody got him to tell me, you know? And he was just looking for anything to think of what it could be.
To me, like, it sounds like the brother's just a bit of a huckster, just sort of threw that theory out there. Because if he's trying to shop it around for a film as well, yeah, it's a pretty shitty thing to do.
As soon as I saw about the film thing, I was like, but he did say about the house. I didn't know the bit that you said about he didn't buy it for cash. That's interesting. Mm. He said about the attendance. Resemblance acknowledgement, and one of his other bits of evidence was, well, he loved bourbon. A lot of busted people love bourbon.
Apparently, though, as well, after his death, the family members discovered gold coins and a valuable stamp collection, and apparently over 200 grand in various bank accounts. Wow. So, you know, the guy was worth a few quid. I don't know where that came from, but the FBI, once again, no connection.
The FBI said also that he seemed too short. Basically, they were like, he's not as tall as the guy who claimed to be D.B. Cooper. And also, like, Kenneth Christensen was balding.
Yeah.
And they said, well, D.B. Cooper had a full head of hair.
Yeah.
But then some of his friends said, well, he did sometimes wear a wig.
So it's possible.
So, yeah, but then it's this stretching. Yeah, a bit. In it.
Well, one of the things that I found bizarre is one of the things the FBI said that ruled him out was apparently he had a level of skydiving expertise above that predicted by the suspect profile.
Mm.
So the fact that he was too good at skydiving precluded him from being a skydiving criminal.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's what I said earlier. They say, oh, he can't have been... He wasn't an expert. They don't think it was an expert. Why?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, what evidence is there? Like, the man jumped out of a plane and pulled a cord. You know, I think most people could probably figure that out.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the fact that he was too good suggests that DB actually fucked something up. I don't know what that would be. But...
Yeah, that's what I never found. I was like, if they're thinking, like you said, if they're thinking all these suspects are too good to be him, what did he do wrong to make him think that?
The only thing I can think is there might be a bit of evidence that the FBI is withheld. You know, so if they did find a suspect, they could ask him about specifics, and there might be that one detail they didn't release where if they mention it, they know it's them. You know, so maybe there is a little something in that.
So I'm going to talk about... did you read about Jack Kofelt?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, there's not a lot to this guy. In my opinion, there's no way it was him. He was the first person who claimed to be him.
Hmm.
And he was a known con man, the criminal history.
Hmm.
He had injuries at the time. It's pretty much the only thing to go on. And there's so many inconsistencies to his story that the FBI pretty much straight away just wrote this guy off. But he was shopping his story around everywhere, trying to get on telly, claiming it to be him. I don't know about you, but if I'd pulled like a great all-time historical heist, I wouldn't be trying to get on every talk show in America saying it was me.
Yeah,
I would keep the mic to myself.
Yeah.
But he was constantly trying to get on TV. FBI were like, this guy's a complete shyster.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually to the point where TV stations are just ignoring him. They're like ignoring his calls. Like, oh, we don't want this guy on.
It's like a shit version of the Zodiac.
Yeah, really, really bad. So that's all there is to Jack Kofelt. In 72, he was like, it was me. And then just kept shouting from the rooftops, it was me.
Honestly.
And it wasn't.
No.
unless it's a genius double bluff. And he was like, if I act like an idiot, they just won't think it's me.
You might be onto something.
And, you know, I'm being all turned around on Jack Kofelt. But that's literally all there is on Jack Kofelt. He's an idiot.
Yeah, yeah.
Strike him off.
Well, one of the ones that I quite like that come up, did you see John List?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's an interesting one.
This is probably the wackiest one.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
But for the listeners, he was an accountant and a World War II and Korean War veteran who murdered his wife, three teenage children, and his 85-year-old mother. 15 days before the Cooper hijacking. And he apparently withdrew 200 grand from his mother's bank account and disappeared. It says he came to the attention of the Cooper task force due to the timing of his disappearance, and apparently matched the hijacker's description, allegedly. And there was a reasoning that a fugitive accused of mass murder has nothing to lose. So, you know, why not? He was captured, though, in 1989. He admitted to murdering his family, but denied any involvement with the Cooper hijacking. But his name still seems to come up all the time, even though there is no substantial evidence. It's just he happened to be a criminal around the time, and it's this whole loose, you know, why not, you know?
I think a lot of it is people trying to tie to sort of, you know, infamous crimes happening around the same time into one person because it makes it more spicy.
That's it, yeah.
Yeah, and they're around the same sort of frame. They looked similar to each other, so they're just like, hey, maybe it was the same person.
Yeah.
And then that sort of idea has run on, but I don't think so.
I mean, to me, this guy, you know, if he's murdered his whole family, just it doesn't seem like the description of Cooper that I've read, where all the people on the plane and the flight attendants were saying that he was a really nice guy. He just seemed like a really decent bloke.
Collected to me.
Yeah, yeah. And a lot of people were saying that he didn't get that bourbon and soda to calm his nerves. He just wanted a drink. Like, he seemed as cool as a cucumber.
Yeah. So John List, another one I've got here is Richard McCoy.
Mm-hmm.
Have you got this one?
Yes.
I like this one.
What did you like about him?
I like the idea. Well, I don't know if I think it's him, but I like the idea of... so this guy is another veteran. He's a Vietnam vet, former Green Beret helicopter pilot. Mm-hmm. Avid skydiver, so these chips will fall into place. And he was thought to be basically after the DB Cooper incident, there was loads of copycats around.
Yeah,
people trying to do the same thing, and this guy was one of those copycats, or was he? So maybe it was Cooper doing the same thing again. Like, I got away with it once, why not do it again? So in 1972, this Richard McCoy hijacked an aeroplane with a hand grenade, which to me, that's not Cooper's style.
No.
I think he would go for the same, because I don't think, like you said earlier, I don't think it was a real bomb.
Mm.
I think it was like, you know, a load of carrots that I taped together.
Spray painted red.
I don't think he would actually get hold of a real hand grenade and do it.
No.
So that's the detail that sort of throws me off. But in 72, when he hijacked this plane with the hand grenade, he did the same thing, parachuted away with $500,000, but was captured days later.
So I read that the hand grenade was apparently a paperweight, resembling a hand grenade.
Okay, so that's that's more likely.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was captured. And then in August 1974... So after being in prison for a few years, he busted out of jail and sort of went on the run until 3 months later, where he was killed, shot in an FBI shootout. Now, some FBI agents think that they were the same man. He was repeatedly questioned when they took him in because a lot of the incident fit the bill of what happened with DB Cooper, but he always refused to comment and never admitted, but never said it wasn't.
Mm.
So I think he liked the infamy. I don't think he was Dan Cooper, but I think he liked the idea that they thought he was and tried to be mysterious about it.
Yeah. Out of all the ones that I read up on, he was probably my favourite for being DB. But I think from everything I've read about him, he is most likely just a copycat.
Yeah, I think he's a good copycat. And I like that of the copycats, he's the most likely to have been actually the real deal as well.
Mm.
But I don't know. I don't know. I don't know if he would have done it again. Do you know what I mean?
It would be a bit ballsy. Like, the same crime twice.
You know, he got 200,000 the first time. I might think, hey, why didn't I up it? Because this was $500,000. It's like...
It's true. Yeah.
Upping it again, yeah. So there we go. Yeah, Richard McCoy.
One of the ones that I found that I quite liked. Do you see Robert Rackstraw?
Yes, this was the first one I looked into, actually.
Yeah, his one's come up quite a bit from what I've seen. So he was a retired pilot and apparently an ex-con, and he served on an army helicopter crew and other units during the Vietnam War. Apparently came to the FBI's attention after he was arrested in Iran and deported to the US to face explosive possession charges, which is quite interesting. Apparently he was released on bail for that one, though. He attempted to fake his own death, I read, by radioing in a false mayday call and telling controllers he was bailing out of a rented plane over Monterey Bay. But then police later arrested him on an additional charge of forging federal pilot certificates. This guy was like...
I didn't have that bit, yeah.
Yeah, this guy's a real dodgy character. And apparently the plane he claimed to have ditched was found and repainted in a nearby hangar. So he actually chored the plane as well.
Nice.
Ballsy. Apparently investigators noticed he had a very similar physical resemblance to the Cooper composite sketches. Mm-hmm. He had military parachute training and a criminal record as well, but they eliminated him as a suspect apparently in 1979 because there was no direct evidence of his involvement.
Right.
I think there was something towards the end of his life where he was another one talking about it on his deathbed as well, if I remember correctly.
A few of these talked about it on their deathbed.
Mm.
It seems to be a common thing.
Yeah. So apparently with Rackstraw, he said in a 2017 phone interview, he said he lost his job over some investigations into him in 2016. Mm-hmm. But he talked to... the FBI about it, and he says that he told everyone that he was DB Cooper. But then it came out that it was all a stunt, allegedly. He turned around and said, no, it wasn't actually me. I was just trying to get some fame out of it. And the details on this are a little bit sketchy.
Robert Rackstraw is one that sort of came up quite a lot, especially this time around, because all these suspects, most of them are dead by now.
Yeah.
And he was the most recent to die. So when I'm searching, you know, Cooper suspects and stuff like this, this came up a lot because he only died last year.
Mm.
So he died July 9th last year from a heart condition.
Yeah.
An ongoing heart condition that finally got to him. And so, yeah, there this sort of a lot of people looking into it. Was it him? Like, what, another one of the suspects is dead. So this one's quite sort of, there's a lot of talk about this on the internet from last year after his death.
Mm. I read that apparently there was a filmmaker who was very interested in Rackshaw as well, a guy called Thomas Colbert. And apparently him and a team of investigators studied all the evidence for years and decided that Rackshaw like, was their guy. Mm-hmm. And in 2016, he published a book which was called The Last Master Outlaw and also produced a documentary on Rackshaw called D.B. Cooper Case Closed. So this guy was pretty bloody sure.
Yeah, it was him, yeah.
Yeah, but you know, by his own admission, he says that he told everybody he was, but he wasn't, allegedly.
Hmm. So I think when I was initially looking, he was sort of one of the ones where I was like, oh yeah, maybe him. But I don't know if that's just because there was so much out there about him that it seemed to be a lot of people's favourites. So I'm just following the herd like, well, it must be him. Like, everyone thinks it's him.
Yeah.
But I haven't decided who I think is most likely of our suspects yet. As we go through, I'm sort of, maybe. And at the end, I think I'll come down and decide which one as we revisit them. But another one here I've got is Dwayne Weber.
Okay, I didn't read that one.
Dwayne Weber, okay. So he claimed to be Dan Cooper on his deathbed. he died in 1995. He was one of the initial suspects, but his DNA ruled him out quite quickly. Even though he had quite a strong resemblance to Dan Cooper. But it was his wife who really thought it was him. So she had sort of a number of things. Basically, I don't know what it was that sort of got her thinking it was him after he died.
Mm.
But something happened that triggered this idea of like, I think it was him. And then she started recalling events throughout their marriage.
Okay.
And tried to like puzzle the pieces together. She said like so many of the pieces like fit in place. She remembers him talking in his sleep about airplanes, like something about an airplane, like a weird memory about stealing an airplane or something like that. she remembers him having like a knee injury that he didn't say how he got the Thanksgiving weekend, because it was the Thanksgiving weekend that happened of 1971. And oh, hang on a second, I've got it here. I was like, why did she think it was him? Because he claimed on his deathbed to her that it was him. So just before he died, he said, Joe, his wife, he said, Joe, I was DB Cooper. Died. And then she was like, what's he talking about? And then she started piecing these things together.
Hmm.
The knee injury, the talking in the sleep, all these little bits and bobs throughout his life. And she sort of went forward, I think it was my husband. And they said, no, we already tested his DNA. He was one of our, you know, we already looked into this. It wasn't him.
Yeah.
Boom. And that's all I have on Dwayne Webber. His wife, she's still adamant that it was him.
Well, she would be, I guess, you know, if that's your husband's dying words.
Yeah.
You're going to believe it, but...
And it's pretty exciting.
It's kind of cool. Yeah, that's it. But the DNA rules him out, so all he's done is he proved himself to be a massive liar on his deathbed.
Yeah, that's true. Yes, I suppose if she doesn't want to think, God, one of his last words to me was just a fucking lie.
Yeah, thanks,
so
love.
So she's going to go with it, I guess.
I mean, out of all of them, that's pretty much the ones that I gave any time and attention to. Were there any other ones that you come across that were of interest?
I've got a couple here which are just sort of, there's not much info. Mm. One that I had quite a lot of info on, but I don't know if I thought it was him, so I haven't written too many notes. It was a guy called William Gossett.
Okay, yeah.
He told his sons numerous times that it was him. Descriptions of him, his friends and people that knew him described him as a quote quirky guy. His sons remember him having a lot of money in 1971 around Christmas time. He had military background, survival experience. He was a parachutist. He'd been in the Korean and Vietnamese wars. The FBI agents didn't find any links other than a few statements made by himself, which are him telling his sons, you know, I was Dan Cooper. So basically his sons are like, it was him, look at all this stuff. And the FBI agents are like, yeah, that's all there is. He told you that it was him. He died in 2003.
And he was a bit of a kooky chap. So that's just probably another thing that threw him off. Yeah. I read, though, you'd probably quite like him. He'd probably have a place on this very show, actually, because he used to host a radio talk show in Salt Lake City, which featured discussions about the paranormal.
Wow, he was a quirky guy.
There you go.
I'm going to change the podcast to the quirky guy. I didn't know that. I didn't find that bit about him hosting the talk show. That's interesting. So, yeah, the only other names that I sort of briefly looked at were... did you read anything about Robert Richard Lepsy?
I did, yeah. Not too much, though. What did you get on him?
Okay, so he went missing in 1969. So already I'm like, why are we even thinking it's this guy?
Hmm.
Because there was no missing persons reported. Basically, the thing that I found interesting is the weekend of the hijacking, there was no reported missing persons that fit the bill for what Dan Cooper looked like, which I found an interesting little tidbit. If he disappeared, there was no reports of a missing person. But in 1969, this guy went missing. Basically, he had a strong resemblance. They found his car dumped at an airport with the keys still in the ignition. And he had reportedly taken a flight to Mexico. Hmm. And that was the last time he was seen. And they think it might have been him because it was a missing person. But I don't know why. This is 2 years before the event that he went missing.
So the flight that he took, was it 100% him? They know that, or was it?
Not 100%. So the only thing that they know is that he went missing. I think he had I haven't written here, but I think it was a butcher shop or a shop of some kind.
Hmm.
He closed it up, got in his car after work, drove off. That was the last time people saw him.
Huh.
A few days later, they found his car at this airport, keys in the ignition. And it's thought that he got a plane to Mexico because he matched the description for someone who got this flight to Mexico. Last he's seen.
That's interesting. Like, it just shows you how lax airport security was back then.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, it might have been him, you know.
I remember it being lax when I was a kid, so I can't imagine what it was like in 1969.
That's true, actually, yeah. Yeah.
So that's one which I don't think has a lot going for it.
Mm.
Did you have William Smith?
No. Didn't catch that one.
Okay, so this is a really weird one. He was never a suspect.
Hmm.
Okay. But in 2018, an anonymous military data analyst identified him as who they thought it was. he was the friend of a dismissed suspect from 1985 called Dan LeClaire.
Okay.
So in 1985, they'd been looking into this guy called Dan LeClaire. They really thought it was him, but after a while dismissed him. And this analyst, after going through the details, thought, oh, it wasn't him. It was his friend.
Mm.
If we'd looked into his friend, we wouldn't have dismissed him because his friend had stolen Dan LeClaire's life story and they think it was actually him that did it. So where the trail ended on Dan LeClaire, actually it was his friend that had stolen his life story. And that if they'd followed that lead, they would have come to the conclusion that it was him that did it. The only issue is there's no evidence. It's just this guy. I think it was him. So just this anonymous analyst thought it was him. But he was never actually a suspect, William Smith. But that was interesting because that was only from 2018 that name sort of came up.
Yeah.
After they'd already closed the case on this guy. So
2016,
they said not looking for him anymore. And this guy just sort of maybe did it off his own back or whatever.
The thing I find odd is that there seems to have been a decent amount of evidence that was left. But there's just no suspect at all is plausible. There's nothing that's tied to anything else, and no other fingerprints have come up. Even in this day and age, I do historical analysis on things. Mm. So there's no other cases that this guy has cropped up in where they've taken fingerprints for him.
No.
Which is just baffling, because you'd think someone who's got the stones to do that is probably quite a hardened criminal.
Mm. Oh, yeah, I don't know. Or he just snapped one day.
Yeah, who knows?
He just did it. He just took a punt. Maybe he was just like a nobody. I'm just going to do this. I might die, but I reckon I can parachute out of a plane. Do you know what I mean? I can make a fake bomb. I'm going to do this. But it's weird. Like the report that no one was reported missing of that weekend. I'm like, who the hell was this guy?
Yeah.
So the only other name I have here is a guy called Walter Rieker. He died in 2014.
Hmm.
He was a paratrooper. He claimed to be a spy.
That's already discrediting him.
He admitted to being Cooper in a taped confession before he died. And he settled in Clay Ellum in Washington, which is the closest town to where the plane was when Dan Cooper jumped out. So they reckon he jumped out, landed, settled in the nearest town, lived out his life.
Soul.
Fine. And then just before he died, he's like, I'm just going to record my confession. See ya. Peace out. He just kept his head down in this small town. That was the only other name I looked into briefly. But that's the list of suspects I've got.
Mm. So one little thing that I thought was quite interesting that came from all this is the plane that was hijacked, the Boeing 727 at the time, the back door in the plane. So yeah, you think of a back door these days, it's like that little side exit door, isn't it? You know, where you can put the stairs up to it. This particular plane had like that, you know, like on like a big military plane where it's got like that cargo hatch that drops.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Yeah, like you'd see like paratroopers jumping out of, you know, like, go, go, go. They go piling out the back. It had a cargo hatch that was like that. So it sort of flipped down. And that's what he opened and jumped out of. And during the bits afterwards, just to stop something like this happening again, so it couldn't be opened from the inside, they had to develop something that they called a Cooper vane, which sits on the back of the plane and keeps it locked. So it means it has to be unlocked from the ground.
So, interesting.
Yeah, it's just to try and stop further incidents.
A little bit of a legacy.
Yeah.
Hmm. So of our suspects, are there any that you would hang your hat on and say, yeah, maybe that guy?
Not really. They would just seem really, really tenuous. And there's a lot of evidence that goes the other way against them, you know, and the FBI have explicitly ruled out most of these people.
I mean, you can pick holes so easily in all of them.
Yeah.
Which I guess is why they were only suspects and never actually arrested.
Yeah.
Because none of them seem like it's definitely them. I mean, there's a few I like more than others, like Lynn Doyle Cooper. I kind of like that one, but that is based on, you know, conjecture of a child.
Yeah, and it's, they all seem to be, like, the ones that I like are the ones that would make a good story.
Yeah, I think that's what it is, because the other ones I like Richard McCoy. I like the idea of the copycat trying again, never admitting.
Yeah, that's it, yeah. Yeah, it sounds good, but realistically, nah.
Yeah, I don't know who, I'm sort of flipping through these suspects thinking, who would I go for, and... Yeah, like you say, it's just the ones that make a cool story.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe there's a lot of people who think it was Robert Rackstraw. Like you said, there's the book about it, the Case Closed book, and potential for making this film about it. But I don't know if I think it's him. There's nothing about it that made me go, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I could still find holes in it. So there's none. I personally don't think it's any of them.
I don't know. I just think it's some crazy maverick renegade who had a mad idea. You know, as you say, maybe he snapped or something and he thought, why not? He went and did it. He got most of the way there, but he ended up eating pavement and that was the end of it.
So you think he's just a big splat?
I think so.
I love the idea that he got away with it and he's not any suspect. No, he was wearing a fake mustache or whatever, like, you know, fake nose, landed and then just went a bit like the guy who did the taped confession, who just like settled down in a small town. It's like Hitler running off to Argentina, you know, like, see you later, guys.
So D.B. Cooper is chilling with Hitler in Argentina.
Yeah, exactly. He got away with it. He hitchhiked the rest of the way to Mexico. But yeah, unfortunately, I don't think it was any of them suspects.
Nah, I've got to say, me neither. It's a shame. It's one of those ones that I think is just never going to be solved.
No, no. And even, like we said, the FBI closed the case in 2016. Even they're like, nah, we're not going to solve this. Let's just put our resources elsewhere.
Yeah. It's going to be one of those mystery men that's already fallen into almost like a mythical status.
Yeah.
You know, the mythical D.B. Cooper will never be caught.
Yeah. But, yeah, I'm glad I had a chance to look into it more and look into some of these suspects and stuff. Is there any stuff you wanted to talk about further on the case, or is that everything we've got?
That pretty much wraps it up for me. There was one further little thing. Is I know that he left the bomb case on board, and apparently the FBI have got that, and there's some details about it that have been unreleased, just in case a viable suspect did come up. You know, like I was talking about earlier, how they don't release certain details. Apparently, there's specifics on the bomb that they haven't released, just in case someone does come up as a viable suspect, even all these years later.
So they're not continuing their hunt, but if something comes to them,
that's it.
Still got that there in
their
pocket.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, interesting stuff. I hope the listeners who requested it are happy with our more thorough analysis of the D.B. Cooper case. I talked about on Weird Tales, we're going to be sort of running the show in series from now on. So listeners, me and Rick are going to be dropping one of these revisited episodes, probably like once per series of Weird Tales. So if there's any cases or things that we've sort of brushed over that you'd like us to do in more detail, let me know, because I will be taking listeners' suggestions into consideration a lot for these, because it's interesting to know what you would like us to talk about more.
Exactly. The weirder, the better.
Oh, yeah. And like I said, we already covered a few. If you go on, it's bobshoy.bandcamp.com. You can buy all three of the previous episodes for $2 or any price. You can give me $20 for them if you want. But they're fun episodes. They're really good ones. And I think that wraps us up.
I think so.
Oh, and I'm telling to get in contact with your suggestions. If you want to do that, it's unexplainableuk@mail.com, or go to weirdtalesandtheunexplainable.com and you can contact through there. If you're listening to this, you've probably been listening to Weird Tales a while. You already know where you can get in contact. But yeah, do that. Any other stuff you want to say, Rick?
No, I'm good. That's it. Thanks for listening.
Excellent. Thanks for listening, guys. After this episode, there's going to be a short break. We're going to be off for a month, and then we'll be back with some new stuff. So get in contact with any stuff you want to hear about. And yeah, that's about it. Bye-bye. Thanks for listening.
See ya.
Love you lots. Bye-bye.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Here's a question for the marketers listening. Want to find that perfect customer beyond the world of scrolling, swiping, and searching? Here's a secret to make sparks fly. Smooth talking with podcast ads. With Acast, you can reach millions of listeners who'll be hanging on your every word. On the train to work, in the gym, or waiting in line for coffee. Start up the conversation with podcast listeners anywhere and everywhere. And they're looking for love. 60% of listeners have a higher trust in brands they've met on podcasts compared to social. Get closer to your audience. Make podcast ads with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.